Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 545 for comics originally released on January 17th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC as part of the New Age of Heroes comics is Damage number 1. This is got a Dark Knight's Metal tag to it on the cover, although honestly I have no idea why. And this is one of those things where it's interesting how a comment or two made before I read it potentially colored how I read the comic, but I don't know for certain because I hadn't read it without the comment, so I went in thinking one thing and it was reinforced by the comic, and whether I would have picked up on that or not otherwise, I don't know. And the comment was that how this was a really good Hulk comic. And, you know, I wasn't thinking that going in. I was thinking old school Damage. Are you familiar with the previous Damage character?
I never read it, no.
Okay. So you're coming at a clean slate with no background.
Nope.
That probably helps. It's got no connection to this whatsoever. It's basically a kid who discovers he's got explosive powers, practically destroys part of a city or whatever, gets ostracized, but becomes a hero nonetheless. And he later was part of the Justice Society, actually. So they did some cool stuff with that character. But, you know, having that Hulk reference, looking at the cover, I'm like, okay, I can see it. Big, gargantuan guy. But man, by the time I got just a few pages into that two-page splash and whatnot, where we see him kind of the shirt ripping and all of that kind of a stuff, and he's, for lack of any other term, hulking out, I'm like, yeah, I can totally see that parallel. I get it. And then we've got this countdown timer, and immediately I'm thinking government project, and specifically the Red Hulk of the U.S. Avengers we read not too long ago.
Yeah, same clock.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's this big, strong guy with an hour of power. Later we get this inner dialogue going between the monstrous part and the non-part, a la Banner and the Hulk. And I'm like, eh, it's an okay comic. It's not great. It's not horrible. It's not deep. It felt actually a little short, to be honest. But this is a radically different character than the Grant Emerson Damage that came out during Zero Hour, which is fine. I'm not saying that character was necessarily even worth bringing back. But to replace him with what feels like a knockoff of the Hulk seemed a little odd. And then when we finally start getting some clues as to his backstory, we've got this other guy who thinks he should have been picked, this Major Leggett or whatever. You know, if you can put the pieces together that this character, Ethan, was experimented on by this Marie person who promised she'd turn him into some sort of a hero. The guy acted in a way that she didn't like on the last mission, so she was probably going to fix him or reprogram him or something. This Major Leggett's part of the program, and he felt he should have been picked, so he's passed over, which runs a little kind of like, was it Talbot, or who was it with the Hulk stuff, who was kind of always kind of, you know, who's this Banner guy kind of thing, a chip on his shoulder sort of a deal. But then when we get the Suicide Squad showing up for a cameo, really a photo op at best, it's clear that Amanda Waller had prior knowledge of this program and seemed ready to jump in the minute it went wrong, as she figured it would. All of that's in here, but it's really not what the story is about. It's just stuff that you can pick up from it, which I guess is good. I don't know. But the guest shot of the Suicide Squad, or Task Force XL, as they're called here, I don't know what the L is doing there, but all right, was gratuitous and a tease for the next issue. And I felt I didn't really get much about Ethan or Damage so much as a promise of more to come. And obviously he's going to be facing off against the Suicide Squad, or Task Force XL, as they're going by here, next time. And when I hit that final page of the story, I'm like, wait, we're at the end of the issue already? It wasn't bad, but it felt like there should have been more story here versus, I guess, almost more. There was a lot of backstory, I guess. I don't know. How did it work for you?
Yeah, it was all right. I haven't been reading Suicide Squad, and I was assuming that maybe the Suicide Squad metal tie-in was where this damaged person sprang from.
I don't believe so. I don't think I've read him anywhere but here. I'm a week or two behind.
Oh, okay, so it says it sprang from the pages of Metal, but maybe didn't.
Or maybe hasn't yet.
Oh, okay. And so in the latest iteration of Suicide Squad, who's the giant lady?
That's Giganta. Not that she's showing up in the Suicide Squad book currently.
She's not.
Not currently. She may have earlier.
Okay. So is that why it's XL? Because she's large?
You could argue because you've got the big eyes of Solomon Grundy and Parasite there too. I don't know why it's called XL.
Okay. Interesting.
But I may be, I'm an issue behind on Suicide Squad. Maybe things radically changed in issue 33. I didn't think to read that before reading this.
You wouldn't think you'd have to.
No, I wouldn't. So I didn't.
Well, I mean, this is fine. It's pretty light on story. I think the Venditti art is pretty really, really, really nice.
No argument there.
Yeah, he does a fantastic job with drawing this huge muscular creature, and it's really, really well done and well detailed, and in a variety of poses and action scenes. So if you like that sort of thing, this is something to look at for sure. The story, it seems like a run of the mill, government experiment gone wrong type of story. And, I've read those sort of things before, and I don't particularly find them interesting. And this one wasn't anything special about this story. So it's just okay. Nothing to write home about. And I don't know. I think it's worth sampling especially if you like Hulk books.
Absolutely, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Go ahead and sample it because you'll feel right at home, and it's okay. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing great.
Nothing to hook you in it though.
I don't think I'll read another. I don't think I'll read number two. I don't think I need to. I think I really got the gist of everything it has to offer. In this first issue, I don't feel like they were finding their way or warming up, or this was like a pilot or something. I think they really, this is the story that they're going to be telling, and it's not the kind of story that I tend to read, so it's just not for me.
No, that's fair. For me, it felt like they're starting the story, but they haven't really fully gotten into it. So to me, it was like the first chapter of a couple to get some sense of completion or whatever. But I think this was not the right book to kick off the new age of DC heroes.
And I hope this isn't the best one.
To me, it's not even a question of if it is the best one, because I don't think it will be. But we'll find out. But again, somebody on the forum or the Slack channel had made a comment that this is a Hulk riff. And I would totally agree with that. I think that's dead on the money. But it then makes me question the originality of the whole New Age of Heroes, or at least the first half of it. Because if this is a Hulk riff, the Terrifics is very clearly a Fantastic Four riff, and I think DC has kind of even admitted that. Silencer looks like it could be kind of a Punisher riff. It's females and whatnot, female character. Geez, wow, that's radical change.
Sideways looks like Spot a little bit.
I was actually going to go with Spider-Man, look, tone, and style from the couple of preview pages we've got here.
But the power set.
The web swinging's been replaced with teleportation riffs.
Yeah.
Okay. Curse of Brimstone, I really don't know much other than the cover there. It could be a riff on the Ghost Rider. Now, suddenly, we've gotten at least half of these that look to be riffs on Marvel characters. And this is the new age of DC heroes. That worries me. If DC thinks that the way to improve things, up their sales, or whatever they're trying to do with this, is to go off iconic or archetypal Marvel characters, it's almost like saying that DC's problem is their characters. And I've never believed that to be true. I certainly don't believe it to be true now. but I'm hoping one of these is something new and original and not something that seems to be a close correlation to a Marvel property. My money's mainly on new challengers, because it's, of course, just the challengers of the unknown, but new. But even then, I'm sure somebody could find an analog over at Marvel. The question is it a fairly blatant one like some of these others are starting to appear to be?
Yeah, I hope not, because, yeah, they do enough of that back and forth and ripping of each other off. It is tiresome. So I hope that's not what all these are.
Same here, but I'm starting to wonder. For me, I'm going to go with a B minus on this. I thought it was, you know, it had its moments, some of the character bits, certainly the art, but I don't think it's a strong sell, and I think there are going to be a lot of people who may sample it but don't feel the urge to come back, and we'll see how the title does long term. You said you're not coming back. Where did you land on a rating?
I am going to give it a C+, and I will not be coming back. Sampled and moving on.
Understandable. How full is your reading list right now?
About 30 a week.
More thinking in terms of full enough that you don't have room for more, or full enough or empty enough you're looking for more?
There's always room for good comics. And I will make room for good comics.
Fair enough.
This just didn't do it.
No, I can understand that, and don't disagree with that. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Certainly.
This is Champions number 16. This is the recruitment issue they were doing, Mark Waid and Humberto Ramos. This was one where, again, before reading this, I had seen a headline from, I don't know if it was ICV2 or CBR, one of the places, that Waid, and it might have been linked to on the Slack channel too, that Waid was leaving the book, Jim Zub would be taking over, and he had plans to welcome Wasp and Ironheart, the younger Wasp and stuff. And I'm like, well, I wonder who they're going to recruit this issue.
Which, you know, Ironheart's already been approached in this series, you know, and so, you know, we assumed it was just a matter of time before she would make her way onto the page, because it was pretty blatant that she was a good fit for the team and she was coming. So
I don't have any problems with her coming. I'm starting to have a little bit of issues with Wasp. And I'll get to that in a few minutes as to why I don't think she's the right choice for the team.
And I know Mark Waid can't write everything forever, but I'm really bummed, because this has been a strong comic for a long time, and Jim Zub, I'm sure he's a nice person, hasn't really dazzled me with any of his product that he's ever written. So I am concerned that this will not be a top of the stack read for me in the coming months, and it's kind of a bummer.
I can understand that. I think Zub's a good writer, but Mark Waid is Mark Waid.
No, I don't think it's. I don't think it's that Mark Waid's great, and so.
I'll disagree with you on that, but okay. I think he is.
No, Mark Waid is great.
Yeah,
but it's not just that there's just a degree that Zub's not as good. I mean, I don't even think he's in the. He's just. I think he's average at best. So I think it's really a big step down.
Okay.
Not a slight step.
Well, hopefully he is able to prove you wrong. Not that you'll be reading it, but if it's really wonderful, we'll let you know.
I'll sample it, but the last few books I've sampled haven't turned out well. So I don't have high hopes.
Oh, but you're giving it a chance. That's all a new creative team can ask for. I thought this was a good issue. It was fun. To me, the recruitment drive was the less interesting part. The much more interesting part was the whole Vivian, you know, the 2.0 android or synthetic life form, whatever would be the proper term for her, versus the new biological version that we got out of the last arc. The whole different caption things took me a second to understand at first, because they introduced the caption with the other character in the panel, and it's, oh, that's for the other one, and got it. But it wasn't as immediately obvious. I could see that tripping up neophyte comic book readers. That whole subplot, though, of what's going on with the Vision's family and now got two daughters and whatnot, I found fascinating.
Yeah, it's making the best of a bad situation, I think. I didn't like the let's turn her into Ms. Marvel, and I don't know why we went down that road. It was a really cool story with her as the Synthezoid. Viv was a great character, and it feels tacked on to have this extra copy of her now, and I'm curious how long before they hopefully revert back. I don't know.
I don't think they should. I'd like to see both stick around, but I think they need.
Won't work.
Why not?
No, that won't work. You can already see the storylines. You know, the one's jealous of the other one. It was fun before. Get back to it.
I think they should.
Not my Viv.
Fair enough. I think they should keep going with it. I think it'd be interesting to see this play out long term. But to do that, they need to give the biological one some sort of power set. And personally, I think it should be some sort of complementary power set to density control, something different but equal. The problem is the only thing that really comes to mind is give her some PIM particle type stuff, have her do the mass increase decrease, because mass versus density. But that's redundant now that they're bringing the Wasp in, the younger one of that, and you've still got Ms. Marvel, who can do the embiggening thing or whatever, so it's a little redundant there. But if they don't give her a power, I don't see how she can really stay in this title. But I want to see both versions of the character go long-term. But I think there's an uphill battle. I'll grant you that.
And she was a great breakout character that was a lot of fun, and now she's schizophrenic. And I just don't see it. I don't see the appeal and where it's going to go and how it'll work. But somebody can prove me wrong, maybe.
Hope so. We'll see. I just don't know if Wade's going to have enough issues to do that, or if Zub's got a game plan on this. I did find it interesting when they were essentially recruiting Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur that the villains there were the Gambano brothers, the acrobatic thieves. And when they hit encounter Devil Dinosaur, one of them's like, "Hey, remember me?" And there's a caption of a story from like 1998, like a 20-year-old story. It's like, geez, I like having the caption. Don't get me wrong. I think footnotes are cool, but kind of funny they had to pull that far back.
Yeah.
I also liked the jab at Cyclops on how his name should be Wikipedia, because he's always in this book spouting off, you know, bizarre stuff. Little surprised he got the joke, but, you know, hey, we'll go with it. I do think, again, jumping around a little, going back to the Moon Girl stuff, where she's like, you know, there's the caption of smartest human alive. 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, I'd have gone with that. But with that X-Men Gold Annual we talked about last week, I want a re-ranking. I want to know where Maggie Braddock sits on there. I don't think it's is clear cut that Moon Girl is the number one at this point.
Oh, I don't know. She's just a baby. I don't know if she's ready to dethrone anybody yet.
She's a baby that can talk, and the whole bit she was doing with the technology stuff or whatnot. I mean, in 3 months to have garnered that much knowledge and stuff, to me, that's pretty intelligent.
Yeah, come back in about a year or two, though. Come on, give her a little bit of time.
Well, no, my point is she may get it now, she may not later. We'll see. I don't know. The page at Stark Labs with Amadeus, Hulk, and Ironheart, it took me a little bit to realize what they were doing with the captions. And I think it was uber geeky and kind of nonsensical, but basically every equation they've got there all resolves to that -7 plus 26i there at the bottom. And I don't know if this was some sort of, you know, intellectual challenge between the two or what the hell was going on. It didn't totally work for me. Seeing the Hulk and the Hulkbuster, you know, gauntlets and mask, that was kind of funny. Again, the whole kind of clip show of let's go recruit some new champions. Fun, nice, not the highlight. I'm really curious, like I said earlier, where they go with the two daughters of Vision.
Yeah, I mean, and whether they, because they touched on whether they're going to recruit, you know, the newly minted Synthezoid, and I don't know what the status of Viv is. She was a member, but is now a powerless meat sack like the rest of us. So I don't know what that does to her membership. She becomes a Jarvis character and hangs out and back at the headquarters or what?
Or she gets some sort of technology or weaponry. Pym particles seem like an obvious choice, but if you've got, you know, the new Wasp, it's totally redundant.
Yeah, we don't need any more shrinky people.
What if she's going to stay on the team, she needs powers. I don't know what they would be. I'm curious where they're going with this, because they're clearly building it up, and there's an aspect of it that's starting to get just a little bit creepy, and frankly looks better for the biological one than the non-biological one. To me, this was a pretty good standard, what I would call kind of a quiet issue between arcs, where they've wound one down, have a little bit of carryover or things to serve as an epilogue of that and maybe a prologue of something else, plus have a little bit of business they go do, such as recruiting new members. I enjoyed the issue. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'm going to go with a B+ on this.
Yeah, I mean, I still liked it. It's a B for me. Good comic. I just little disappointed that Wade's leaving already, but, you know, he did, what, 48 issues of Daredevil before bouncing, so I was hoping for a little more of a run on this one.
Well, and he's working on the Avengers stuff, which is going, like, weekly, so that may take up a little more time. I, too, am disappointed he's leaving this. I just am curious if is something else coming in the wings to fill the slot in his schedule.
Yeah, I'm curious. Maybe he might be carving some time to take on something else.
Don't know. Hope so. I love his writing.
I mean, if Dan Slott is leaving Spider-Man, has Mark Waid written Spider-Man?
I'm sure he has written the character. I'm positive of that, but I don't know that he's written the title.
Yeah, could be interesting.
He's never had a long run on it if he's done it. He may have done a fill-in issue or something.
Yeah.
It'd be fun. I'd like to see that.
Could be.
Shall we move on to our other title?
Oh, sure.
Now, this is The Blue Baron number 2. It is a binge book, trademark, by Sit Comics. This is not available through Diamond. One of the listeners, Darren, is behind this, asked if we'd review it. I said, yeah, sure. Very curious about this project. I've been talking with him on and off over a little while about this, and I'm very excited about it because he's... it's a $3.99 comic. It's 64 pages, so over triple the size of a standard comic. And he's doing it where he's selling it kind of directly to the stores, kind of cutting Diamond out as the middleman and such. And I hope that works for him because I think it's a very interesting business model. I think it's got a lot going for it. I like the larger page count. And I read both the first issue of this and the second issue that we're reviewing. Did you read both or just go for the second?
I read both.
Okay. The basic concept here of the Blue Baron, I would sum up as a mashup of what if Superman dressed like an American Revolution era Captain America had the secret identity essentially of Bruce Wayne with a tech company he's got to manage and all of that stuff, and had a little bit of almost like a Freaky Friday Shazam thing going on, where he wound up body swapping permanently with a 13-year-old. Because it's not like they switch back and forth. It's like 13-year-old's now in the Blue Baron's body, and the Blue Baron is now in this 13-year-old's body. There are aspects of both of these issues that are, you know, a little maybe corny or whatever, but not overly so. But it, to me, is reflective of the fact that this is an all-ages title. You know, it's something that I think you can put in front of younger readers, not like, you know, 6 or 7, although I think they could easily, you know, follow along or whatever. But to me, the, I don't know, 9 to 13 age certainly would, like aspects of this. But even as a significantly older than that reader, I found it really fun and enjoyable. There was a special thanks to Tom DeFalco on the inside front cover of this, which I found kind of interesting. Because I don't know what influence he may have had on this, but there's a lot of this that reminds me of the MC2 titles that Marvel did about 20 years ago, which were set, you know, as a second-generation Marvel, if you will. A-Next, The Buzz, Dark Devil, Spider-Girl, all of which were had art at times by Ron Frenz, who does the art here. So that strengthens that, you know, kind of parallel or whatever. But I found this to be a kind of iconic superhero stuff with a definite humor bent to it and a mainstream bent to it, not the inside basketball kind of superhero stuff that we frankly tend to be getting at Marvel and DC. So again, some goofy, corny aspects some people might not like, but I think would definitely appeal to the types of kids that are watching Thundermans, and I'm trying to think of some of the other superheroic type stuff on like the Disney Channel and things like that.
Yeah, this could definitely work as a kid's comic. I think it's a lot more youthful than you do, I think. That's the audience as I was reading it, just much younger than me. That's okay. When I finished these two issues, larger than some trades that I've read, by the way. So a lot of value. A lot of value, yeah.
64 pages, most trades are going to be at least 80.
Times two.
Fair enough. I'll grant that.
There's the art's really good. I think it's solid. The humor is a little corny throughout. I think the second issue was stronger than the first, and so that does good for the series that as it goes on, and maybe it'll probably get stronger. One of the problems that I had was with the first issue was that, the basic gist is, the kid swaps with Blue Baron, and we kind of see that from like a lot of angles. So a lot of different people weigh in on this circumstance, and it kind of, that's pretty much the whole first issue. And so not as much happens as when we get to the second issue, where we've kind of already established that and we can move past it. And it's a little more action, a little more moving parts, a little more fun. So that's good. It's good that it kind of progresses that way. The overuse of Eidos Mio throughout as a catchphrase, I guess, maybe for Ernie, and was prevalent throughout, and I don't think it worked for me. It didn't catch on and become catchphrase worthy. I found it an annoying saying that he just kept inserting in there.
I didn't realize it was that often.
It felt like an awful lot. Yes, which I had to look up because I didn't know. It means "oh my god" in Spanish.
Yeah, I figured it was something of that sort. Yeah. I thought it was there, three or four times, but I didn't. I don't know. I noticed it, but it didn't really grate on me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. But that's a nitpick. Some fun stuff. But again, this is a much younger comic than I would read normally. And so it just skews a little younger demo than me. But I thought it was pretty good. And I thought it was fun in places. And it was nice to see the bully get his comeuppance finally. And it's kind of cool to see these Freaky Friday situations and how they play out. And they went back and forth really well without making you dizzy with the transitions back and forth. It was really easy transitions back and forth. You knew exactly where you were and who was who. And it was that was handled really well.
Yeah. Now, this is a well put together project, because I think the first issue works as kind of that pilot episode, if you will, of a TV show. And then I get the sense that you'll probably be able to read almost any issue thereafter, which will have enough of a recap that if you've missed the first, you can still tell what the basic premise is and what's going on. But you could almost, I don't want to say read them in out of order, because I don't know what's going to happen in the others, but not like missing one is, oh geez, I've got to just stop reading until I fill the gap. But also, this is a well-put-together package in terms of Ron Frenz has decades of experience doing this. Covering
Sal Buscema.
Yeah, by Sal Buscema.
Yeah.
Who's got, a lengthy track record in comics. Colors by Glenn Whitmore, who's also got at least a 20-year track record. Letters by Marshall Dillon, who's also got at least a 20-year track record. So this is not just, who could this guy find? Darren assembled a bunch of really known, recognized, and tenured creators, and it really shows on the page. It does, I think to your point, it's targeting a younger audience, But not in a way where I felt, geez, this is talking down to me or anything of the sort. It's something that, you know, do I really identify right now with a 13-year-old in high school? No, or junior high or whatever level he'd be in. No, not really. Not at all. But, you know, it's something that is at least accessible to everybody, and entertaining. And to me, it's more TV superheroics than comic book superheroics, and I don't mean that in any sort of a good or bad way. It's just a different flavor of the genre. Because I think if this had been done by, because Darren's got, you know, he works in TV, or at least has written for, you know, Seinfeld and some other shows like Casey Undercover and whatnot. I think if this had been done by somebody steeped in the comics industry, we would have gotten something that was a much more clear-cut derivative of a particular hero versus, like I said, a bit of a mishmash and whatnot. This is grabbing a lot of things from the genre, playing with it, having fun with it, making fun of a few parts, but not making fun of the genre and saying, geez, you've got to be an idiot to be into it. But I think it does lend itself more towards a younger readership that would identify more with Ernie than maybe an older one, but it's something certainly I think older readers can read and enjoy. Whether it's enough to keep them going, don't know. But also to your point, it's a $3.99 comic, it's 64 pages, there's a ton of story in here, and it's not like this is the least bit decompressed. There's a fair amount of words on every page, there's a lot of content, a lot of stuff there. You're totally getting your money's worth here.
Yeah, did you notice who the editor was? I didn't see it on the credited on the page. I couldn't find who the editor was, but there are editor notes throughout the comic.
No, I didn't.
Is that just Darren's notes and he just calls himself the editor? Or is there an editor that's just not credited?
Great question. I'm not sure. I would tend to think
it's Darren,
but where is one where the editor is kind of referring to themselves? I guess it would be, yeah, French for Vacation, your editor. Okay. I hadn't picked up on that, in terms of there not being an editor listed. If there was an editor for the book, they, obviously are very bashful.
Which, that's quite possible, right?
Which I don't think they should be. I think this is a well put together book.
I mean, I like the value proposition. So 60 plus pages for $3.99. I'm behind that. He sent me print copies in the past. And so I've seen, although I'm reading the PDF of this, I've seen the package itself, and it's a nice, solid, heavy stock paper. So they're not cutting corners, on printing or anything. And I don't know how that's an affordable way to do comics. I don't know what his business plan is and business model is. And I know how hard it is for established publishers from Image down to get their books on a shelf in a comic shop. I know how difficult that can be, from just stories from business development people and sales guys at those places trying to get their work on the shelf. So I would be curious how much luck he has with this new model and selling direct. You know, maybe if it's returnable or whatever, he might have some kind of an angle that makes it palatable to retailers. I'd be curious to see how that plays out, and I hope he has much success.
Well, he's already got 100 comic retailers that cover all 50 states in Canada working with him on this, and I think the way he's got it set up is, the catalog is available now, or was as of January 2nd, and it's you've got up until the 25th of January to order, so this will probably come out right after that. Those participating shops will then actually get the books on January 31st. So if you like what's in the catalog, because there's an 8-page catalog or whatever, there's also samples online at sitcomics.net. You can say, hey, this looks good, I want the thing, and get it in pretty quick turnaround. Now, I don't know what his frequency is going to be, or if this is just kind of like, here's the 2018 offering and he'll come back. I don't know if it would be quarterly, if it would be yearly, or what the cadence is going to be. And I think some of that's going to come down to how well does this do. But the fact
I think it was about a year ago when I got the previous round of these. So maybe it was 6 months. So yeah, he has done this before. So this is not the first go round, but it might be the first go round with this model of direct sales to comic shops. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, and I think that's why we're on number two of things like the Blue Baron and some of the other titles.
Yeah.
And I think doing that kind of a cadence is not a bad approach. He just needs to, you know, figure out what's going to work or whatnot. And I hope this kind of direct distribution to the stores works out. Again, having 100 comic retailers participating is good. And there's a list both, I think, on the website and in the back of this comic as to who they are. Cowabunga is one of them. So I enjoyed this enough that I went ahead and ordered the two issues of Blue Baron and the two issues of Startup. The superhero stuff all looked good to me. There was two other properties that were... Actually, three other properties. One was zombies. One was telepathic elementary school students or some such younger kids or whatever. Neither of those really kind of piqued my interest, so I didn't go like all in or something. But I'm hoping he does well on this. I think it's one of the more inventive approaches to distribution since Future Comics. He's got some good quality stuff. The other thing I want to mention, just because I find it very interesting, is the rating he uses for these. I didn't check what the ratings were on the other books, but this one is rated essentially 8 p.m. All content suitable for anyone allowed to watch broadcast TV after 8 p.m. Which, I mean, everybody kind of sort of knows what that standard is instinctively. You know, if you're old enough to sit and enjoy, you know, a primetime TV show, you can go with this. And that was, I think, almost a television-inspired rating, but that makes probably, to me, a little more sense maybe than the T-plus sort of a thing we get on Marvel and DC.
Yeah, and it kind of fits with his sitcomics and, you know, binge books and things. You know, it's all kind of ties together. So, yeah, it works.
So, like I said, I was curious to see how these would work for me. I enjoyed this quite a bit. I don't think these are necessarily for everybody, but I do think it's well worth checking out the sitcomics.net website, look at the different properties, see if a retailer near you is participating, and check one of these things out. 64 pages, $3.99. Again, the value proposition, like you said, that's really hard to pass up.
Yeah.
For me, I'm going to go with an A. I thought this was, like I said, a fun superhero story, and I enjoyed the fact that it had things that were iconic to superheroes, but a mishmash of you know, and a blend of things from different characters.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the B. I think it's definitely worth sampling, and a lot of bang for your buck there. And I did get the first issue of Startup back on the 28th of January in 2016. So it was 2 years ago.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and this is the sort of project that it's going to take a little bit to do the writing, get the art and stuff. And I know he was not wanting to rush into this. And just, again, having lined up 100 comic retailers and stuff like that, that had to take some effort. Plus, you know, he's got that whole day job sort of a thing as a TV writer. So, yeah, he did a good job with this. All of that having been said, another week has gone by, and I've read another couple of comics, I don't know, 8 or 9-ish, not a whole bunch. So I've got somewhere, I'm thinking around 93 or so to read, with maybe another 40-plus-ish coming, my next shipment from Cowabunga. Again, part of it is other stuff going on. Realized I had made one or two errors in the year-end calculations I did, so I had to rework some stuff there. I haven't had enough time to allocate towards reading. I'm hoping to clear out most of this weekend for that, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, you kind of missed the fanboys losing their minds over Batman 39 and the reveal at the end of that, so I'll let you enjoy that when you get there. Wasn't a big deal to me, but whatever. Super Sons ended that story arc, the Super Sons of Tomorrow storyline.
Yeah, I did read that and did have a question on that.
Okay.
Because Super Sons ended it, but I thought Superman 39 was going to be like an epilogue to it.
I thought originally that's how it was solicited.
It's definitely how it was solicited. And I read it, and John wasn't in there at all.
It was not an epilogue.
So I'm thinking it was a fill-in. It was a uplifting fill-in. But
it was very nice, and I'm not gonna confirm or deny. I may have been in an emotional state when I read that one and teared up a little bit. There was some very touching moments with the children from the cancer ward.
Yeah, definitely pulled at the heartstrings. But it was nice they could do that. Nice they did that in a regular book versus squirreling that away in like a holiday special or, you know, some
annual.
Other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was good. And I was thinking the same thing because I said, I got to read Super Sons first because Superman's going to epilogue this. And it wasn't. So maybe we'll get that in 2 weeks.
Yeah, could be. Don't know. I was just a little puzzled by that.
We got a kind of the reveal of who is Yana from Wonder Woman Conan miniseries that's going on. That was interesting to see, and it looks like we're gonna finish that up next month. Although it looks like Wonder Woman's kind of finished up her role this time, but you never know. You never know. Gail Simone's doing a good job with this. It was a nice crossover.
Had no idea. I haven't read it yet. So yeah. So I got two reveals waiting for me. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And then of course Copperhead. The Jay Faber is crushing this thing. It's so good. And it was a really good issue. I thought Ice Cream Man was an interesting first issue. A little spooky in places, but pretty good. I really enjoyed the further adventures of Nick Wilson, another debut from Image. I thought that was really solid, about a guy who loses his powers and kind of loses the fame and fortune that goes with that. And that was a fun first issue. Days of Hate was really good. That was, I think, L.S. Cott. So another debut. So three number ones from Image. We'll see what sticks, if any. So they can launch them, but it's tough to get them past a couple of story arcs or a couple of trades.
Yeah.
The third issue of Dark Fang continues to be a really fun vampire comic. Doesn't take itself too seriously, it was a really pleasant surprise for me, because I don't usually read that sort of thing, but it really worked. And Killer Be Killed, of course, is Brubaker and Phillips at the top of their game and continues to be really great. Another one from Image that I'm really loving. Of course, Doctor Strange was another interesting turn in that book. I think you'll enjoy that, hopefully. Donny Cates doing a really good job on that book since he took over. Mighty Thor gearing up for what's going to be a sad issue eventually when they get there, which they've been talking about for quite some time.
I was going to say, they've been planting the seeds for the death of this Mighty Thor since pretty early on in this Thor's run.
Yeah, so, I mean, a more heartless person can say, just kill a person already. Let's go.
Well, I think that's going to be the crowning success of this, is we're going to get to the end where they finally kill this Thor off, and we're not going to be thinking, geez, finally, it's no, don't.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And we still don't know which Thor it's going to be, really. We don't know for sure. I have my guesses.
I think it's going to be the current Mighty Thor, not... Well, I guess you've got the War Thor and you've got Odin's son, so, you know.
Yeah, you got a few to choose from. It would be interesting. I'm not sure about that Weekly Avengers. It's kind of...
haven't read it yet.
Up and down. It's been up and down. So, I like the idea of pulling all the titles together. Hopefully when we come out the other side, we have a really good Avengers book that is definitely the A title. I'm hoping that's what we're going to end up with. But this so far has been a little uneven, and we'll see. We'll see. It'll get better, hopefully.
Weekly titles are hard to pull off.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, we've had some of those the Batman Eternals and such that have been uneven as well. All New Wolverine's very good. Issue 29 came out, and I really liked it. Continue to like this title. My favorite X book.
Understandable, because some of the others are just kind of floating about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good week. A lot of good comics. I was able to, on Eric from Cowabunga's recommendation, dig into this trade for Jazz Maynard. And it's really good. I think it's Boom. And I'm about halfway through that. And it's kind of a European comic, I think, or a European style comic that was imported over or something like that. It does have a cool art style. little different and off the beaten path, but this path, but it's a pretty cool caper comic, heist comic. A lot of fun.
Cool.
And that's about my week.
Yeah, like I said, I really have not but scratched the surface on it, on my stuff. Hopefully I'll have read more before we talk next, but probably remember little. It's usually how that goes. Let's see, the preview spotlight deadline is going to be Saturday, February 10th, bright and early that morning, or as bright and early as I get up. Solicitations should be out now. Matter of fact,
some have been posted, yeah.
Previews should be coming out, I believe, on the 31st. I just got the email today with the, hey, we're announcing previews, which means the online files, should be available in the Diamond site soon.
That'd be tomorrow then, right?
Should be tomorrow. You're right. That would usually is on a Wednesday. And then the following, after the week after the preview spotlight deadline on February 17th, we'll have the comic book page teleconference, 7 p.m. Central. Hopefully have a lot of people show up, a lot to talk about. I think between the new age of DC heroes, the Marvel Legacy stuff, there's just a lot going on with comics right now. So hopefully people can find stuff they're excited about to send in preview clips on, and there'll be plenty to talk about when we do the teleconference.
I hear you have a special guest on the yearly comic spotlight. Is that true? Like, can you share that, or is that a secret?
I can share that. We've still got to record it, so hopefully all things will come through.
Oh, okay.
We're actually going to record it on the 31st, so this will go out on the 29th. So yeah, let's talk about that for a bit. You've got time, if you're quick, from the time this is released to the time we record, to send in any questions you might have on kind of the sales of comics and trades over the course of 2017. On that episode, I'm going to be joined not only by Sam for the comic stuff, TJ for the trade stuff, but also at least Eric, maybe even James from Cowabunga to get a retailer perspective on all of this. We're going to be looking at both the bestseller list for 2017 on the comics and trade side, as well as kind of taking that step back and looking at the month-to-month stuff over the course of the year. So I'm looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. Always enjoy talking the comics and trades with Sam and TJ, and of course Eric and James. Their retailer perspective is I think, fascinating to listen to and get their perspective on. Because there are certain things I think, yeah, as a reader, I don't think is a good thing. But, you know, you listen to the Cowcast sometimes. He's like, yeah, but you can actually, as a retailer, use this sort of a thing, be it variant covers or whatever, to this sort of impact for the store. Or to get readers engaged.
Well, yeah, it's really a good bellwether, too, to compare, you know, what you're seeing from the national charts to what's actually happening in a ground floor where there's actually a retailer putting his comics out and selling them and see how they line up. That's good. That'll be a fun perspective.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Should be a fun episode. Probably won't be a short episode.
Probably won't be, especially if James is on. Oh my goodness.
Oh, as if Sam and I don't talk enough as it is. No, it'll be good. So look forward for that sometime early February-ish, depending how long it takes me to edit.
Okay.
Editing gets a little more complicated the more people that get involved in the recording. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Nope, that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Nightwing, the New Order number 6 from DC, Marvel 2-in-1 number 2 from Marvel, and Abbott number 1 from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.